Hello and welcome to Talk From Superheroes. Hey everybody, I'm Andrew Ivamy.
And I'm Diana McCullum.
And you're listening to Talk From Superheroes, where every week we discuss a piece of heroic television or film. And this week on the podcast, we are talking about the totality of season one. You seemed like you were impressed by the word totality.
I was.
I saw it in your face. You know
I
what?
I was. You know what?
That makes me feel good, because that didn't feel like a top shelf word. Like
okay.
That's... It's not, you know, it's not a bottom shelf. It's not a bar rail word, but it's all right.
I just feel like we normally say the entire first season. And to throw totality out there, like, oh my, who is this wordsmith? Who is this Shakespeare of our times reviewing Marvel television shows? It's Andrew Ivamy.
One of the co-hosts of Talk Superheroes.
And now I'm just a little intimidated, honestly.
I do normally say entirety, but it's the totality of season one, which I guess isn't totality if it gets another season. But nevertheless, season one of Ms. Marvel is what we're talking about today on the podcast.
We're talking about the whole thing, episode 1 to 6. We will open, as we always do with new media, with a spoiler-free review. And then the spoiler-filled section will be after the theme song.
That's right. So
that's how it works.
So you're safe for now. If you're on the fence about seeing it, or you just want a taste of the episode until you're fully caught up, you can listen to this. This is the safe part, the spoiler-free review. Let's start with it, get into it with the usual and simple question. Diana, did you like it? How'd you feel about it?
I did like it. I'll give it a like. This is a weird one, and I don't really mean the show is weird, but it is a hard one to review in that this show is not for me. This is the most teen-anchored MCU thing ever. I'm an adult woman. And also it's about a Pakistani Muslim teen, but like quite well done. And like if a thing isn't for you, then that's not for you. But other people, this is such a great show. I'm so glad it's out there. It's a weird writing because I think the dialogue's very good and the structure of the season is very bad. So it's a hard thing to say if the writing is good or bad. I'm like, everyone writing each individual episode is doing a pretty good job, but they do not seem to be communicating with each other on who is writing the previous or after episodes. There is kind of no consistency between episodes in terms of tone and story and location and kind of how we're doing things. It's a little disconnected. Kamala is incredible. Everything with her family is really, really great. I would say the biggest thing I would say is this is a really great story about Kamala's family, and it's not as good a superhero story as her as a superhero would kind of be my take. So I'll give it an overall like. Like, I enjoyed it, but it's got structural problems and just some weird things happening in the story. But oh my God, Iman Vellani is incredible as Kamala. She's carrying the show on her back with her charisma and her charm and her loveliness. I'll give it a light like. Andrew, what about you?
I think I'm a light dislike. I think that I agree with most of what you said. I think Iman Vellani is doing a phenomenal job of Kamala. Kamala and the family are the heart of this show, giving back-breaking performances, really owning the shit out of it. I also agree it skews a bit younger than my demographic. I'm a grown-ass man who's barely in touch, even though it's my job to do so. So it does skew a bit young for my interests, so I totally get that, and I agree with that. I think that the plot structure is a mess. It is, nothing's motivated. Shit just starts and stops randomly. It is just doing random things, and then those things end, and then a new thing begins. And nothing motivates one after the other. It's just kind of going wild on its own regard. So, and I also want to know what the hell happened, because something went wrong here, and we'll kind of get into the details of that. But something went horribly wrong. Like, the writing is a mess, the editing is a mess, the structure doesn't make sense. So I think it is generally bad. But I do think that Iman Vellani is Kamala. I want to see her as Kamala in a movie with other writers, with different things to work with a show that might not have had whatever the hell went on here. I think that she is a star. She does more with a look than 2 hours of writing does with this show. So she is phenomenal. And then everything else is just kind of a hectic mess. And then there's a couple of things that just skew a bit younger than my interests. So that leaves me as a general soft dislike. But I think that there is a few charming aspects of this. And I think that representation matters. And I think that this is important culturally and for fans of Marvel and comic books who feel seen and represented on screen. And I think that's beautiful and wonderful. And I want that. And I feel like that deserved better writing than it received in this.
I can agree with pretty much all of that. Yeah. More than I liked this, I'm more excited to see him on in other things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm really excited for the Marvels. Like, it's going to be, you know, it's an MCU, like, theatrical release movie that's going to be, like, have better writers, have a better structure. She's going to explode on the big screen. I'm very excited for that to happen. But, yeah, this was a low like. I think I might even be just, like, a higher like than you, because I'm like, there were plenty of cute boys. There were cute boys in abundance.
Cute boys were abound.
Perhaps too many.
I would argue that there are too many cute boys.
We'll discuss the overabundance of cute boys, perhaps, in Kamala's life.
Can this be spoiled as well?
Not a whole lot.
Okay.
No, not really. Like, the very, very end? Like, I mean, honestly, maybe it can be spoiled just because it's very divergent from the comic. If you think you know what's going to happen, or, like, her story, you really don't. It's very comic divergent of, like, her origins and how she gets her powers and stuff. But other than that, not really.
Yeah, I kind of agree, not really. And because, as we'll get into in the spoiler-filled section, that the plot is kind of meandering and starts and stops. If you watched episode one and you're like, I think I know what's going to happen in episode six, you really don't. There's no scenario in which you do, because whatever you're hanging on to, that just randomly starts and a new thing stops. And a little Easter egg-y things could be spoiled, but that's it, really.
They could be. I'm going to disagree lightly for a very funny reason, which is that one of my notes says episode six feels like a direct sequel to episode one and the middle episodes didn't matter. So one to six actually do connect quite
sure.
a bit to me.
One and five maybe don't, but yeah. But either way, I think it can't really be spoiled other than one or two Easter egg-y things.
I would agree.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a straightforward story about Kamala discovering powers and her family. And then we'll get into the spoiler-filled details of that in a moment. But before we do, we want to thank our wonderful sponsor of today's episode. We want to thank our friends over at TeePublic.com.
We want to thank TeePublic.com for their wonderful t-shirts and hoodies and tank tops and mugs and stickers and all of the things I just mentioned. They have cool designs on them. They're not just blank. There's a cool design made by an indie artist on the things I just mentioned.
Absolutely. It's not blank. That would inherently lose its value. A blank t-shirt maybe has value. A blank sticker? What even is that? A sheet of loose leaf? That's nothing. So you need to get cool designs from independent artists like TeePublic.com has.
Who are getting paid a fair commission for their work. Even better. Even better than just a cool design. A cool design that you're like, I'm helping everybody up. Like the real people on the streets.
Yeah, they're getting commissions. Everybody's winning. When you shop through our storefront, you also support this show as well as the artist. And there's plenty of cool designs.
There are plenty of cool designs. This week, my shirt I love is Jackie Daytona, regular human bartender. What We Do in the Shadows came back this week. And the Jackie Daytona episode is the absolute tops. It's just Matt Berry holding up a beer and it says Jackie Daytona, human bartender. And if you know the episode, you know the episode.
Regular human bartender, Jackie Daytona. That's
Jackie Daytona.
Jackie Daytona.
It is a fantastic shirt.
It's absolutely wonderful. The one that I am liking this week is a shirt called Goatily, and it is the fun 80s kind of neon aesthetic, and it is a goat in space screaming, wearing sunglasses, and it says Goatily, like totally, in like a fun, cool, hyper neon Technicolor font. It is a reference to the recent Thor film, Thor 4, More Thor. But it is a wonderful goat.
I can hear that goat.
Yeah, it's a shirt that you see and you're like, oh yeah.
Hear it.
That shirt makes a noise and I love it.
Shirts don't usually make noise, but that one does. It's very fun on its own. And if you've seen Thor 4, even more fun.
It just doesn't stop if you've seen Thor. And both of those designs, as well as ones that we've previously mentioned on the podcast, can be found at our storefront, which is at teepublic.fromsuperheroes.com. That is teepublic.fromsuperheroes.com. And once again, when you shop through that storefront, you support the artist who designed the design in question, and you also directly support this podcast. So thank you very much, teepublic.com, for your support.
Thank you, TeePublic, for your support and your t-shirts, of which I'm currently wearing one.
Huzzah! Well, let's get into the spoiler-filled section. Let's talk about the totality of Ms. Marvel.
Totally.
Ah! right. So we have seen all of Ms. Marvel. We are now in the spoiler-filled section. It's time to talk about everything. And it's a real mixed bag of a show going on here. Like, some of the highs are high, but for the most part, it's... And for regular listeners of the podcast, you know this about us. We think that that story is king. We're very writing-driven critics of film and television. And if the writing doesn't work, it just can kind of either bore or upset to the point that it's hard to enjoy great performances or visuals or whatever it might be. And I think that this show is kind of an example of that.
I would say that, yeah. Each individual, it's such a weird thing to say the writing is bad, though, because each individual episode, as I said, I think, like, the dialogue works and there's like a fairly good story every episode, but there is no continuity. I would say like the showrunner really needed to put like a little bit more work into like having some continuity of storytelling. Cause especially when you're only telling six episodes, mm-hmm. like if you're doing like a 22 episode season and not every episode connects or has the same kind of vibes, I'm like, well, of course you did 22 episodes, but six episodes is just a mini series. Like it's such a small length of a season that it really should all feel like one, whereas this season is very disconnected. And yeah, the story structure is incredibly weird. Just looking at the Wikipedia really quickly, some episodes had four writers, which tells me there was massive rewriting happening, like probably had one initial writer and then three rewriters. So there was some stuff going on here. But like, you know, we love story, but also like acting is important. No, not is there a bad actor in the group? I don't think so.
I mean, there's two that I might want to say are, but at the same time, they're given so little and written so flat and two-dimensionally that how could I even really judge you as an actor? Like, they are given the writing equivalent of, like, me trying to judge if someone's a good actor in a McDonald's commercial, you know, where someone's just like, Big Macs are now $2.99, and being like, they're good or bad. Like, they're nothing.
They're a person eating a Big Mac.
They're a person who said four words that someone hastily wrote the night before. So I think that that's kind of where I'm at. I could maybe argue two performances are bad, but it's also the writing is bad of those two characters and of a lot of it. It's just a bit of a mess. I think that there is this thing going on with the Disney Plus series, which has kind of happened. Like, obviously WandaVision was a huge success and a lot of the other things have been a mixed bag since, is that Disney has done this experiment to kind of pull back the curtain for a behind the scenes thing where they don't put showrunners in charge of their shows for Marvel. They're putting directors in charge of the show for Marvel. And to kind of like give a bit of industry of what's going on, typically television is a writer's medium. Mm-hmm. A writer has the final say. There is a showrunner who, even though other people will write other episodes, is in charge of a cohesive tone, making sure that things match, there is a continuity, there's a through line through the season. The showrunner is typically king. Or king or queen, is royalty, is in charge in television. In film, it is the director. Mm-hmm. Someone writes a script, hands it off, and that director will chop it up, change it up, make it their singular vision, which is easier to do because you had one script that was submitted to you to do that. But Disney's trying to take director's vision and move it to television, which is what they've been doing for their series. And WandaVision is an example of success of that, to be like, we can have a little bit more visual interest. But I think sometimes it doesn't work, and this is an example of that, where it's like you need a writer at the helm. Otherwise, everything's incoherent and inconsistent as hell.
I get what you're saying. I don't have his name in front of me, but I actually think the showrunner of WandaVision was like heavily involved in TV though before he got WandaVision.
Gotcha.
Even if he was a director, he knew the medium of television, which you would have to make WandaVision a show about TV shows.
It would be helpful. It's helpful.
So yeah. There's a reason I think WandaVision has been the one that worked the best. It was a TV show made by TV show people about TV shows. And you're right. And it's weird that if you're trying to get directors to make these Marvel shows and you're kind of like, they're long Marvel movies, but then this one has no consistent tone like it has a director. Mm-hmm. It is very weird. Like the Pakistan episodes are very different than the New York episodes, but not just because like they're set differently. Like they have totally different vibes of like Kamala's journey and what's happening. Like we really lose some innovative things sometimes. Mm-hmm. I would say one of my favorite things that they did, and I was actually quite excited off the top with this show, I was like, oh, wow, they have come up with a brand new way to do texting on screen. and it is thoughtful and it is interesting and it really pops, like using like signs and billboards around New York to like be the text messages. I'm like, oh, that's so New York. That is so young. That mm-hmm. is so fun. All the text messages are just like short little emojis because that's how people text. Like they're just kids.
Yeah.
They're not writing long paragraphs. Like, and it was... And we're so tired of seeing texts on screen, I think. I'm just, you and me at least. I don't know about the general public. But this was actually like a new way to have texts on screen. I'm like, wow, this is really cool. They put a lot of thought and care into this show. And I'm not sure they did it again after episode one.
I think that this is a positive that will kind of, I think, segue into, we can talk about the bigger negative of the show, which is what the hell was going on. I agree with you. Episode one comes in strong. Episode one hits. In every way, I agree with the texting thing. It's Jersey is where it's at, but
oh, they're in Jersey.
In Jersey, it's
sorry,
like,
Jersey. Like, I think of you as New York. You're right there.
Jersey's like, you got us.
But, we can see the Statue of Liberty. You're New York.
But incorporating, yeah, like the street front store signs, everything like that. It was interesting. It was a way to get it that wasn't a close up of a phone that we've seen a million times in other shows. Always, too, it is the first text message you've ever sent, and there's no history.
Oh, that bothers me so much.
A classic annoying trope about seeing a text on a cell phone. It's the first time anyone's ever messaged anyone. So it was a way to get away from that, which, and then it was also a way to not do the, you know, the decade plus ago, the Sherlock era of like, it's popping up and floating in air, which I think after a year, everyone was like, fuck that. I hate that. I know we were.
I just have to say, for people who hate texting so much, we should not run a website called Text from Superheroes.
True.
But we know a thing or two about texting.
Well, we hate texting on camera. It's a still image medium.
We need it to be done new and fun and with vitality.
We got to get some freshness in there. And this does it with freshness, and that's really nice. And even some of the visual elements of episode one, just like when Kamala gets home and flops on the couch and the camera does a full like 180 spin over her, getting these like big dolly shots. And even just like when she's coming up with ideas of like the what's going to happen on her driver's test and like the animation and the world coming alive.
Oh, yeah, the animation disappeared.
They gave up on that. I think they just didn't have the production time and the budget anymore, and we'll go more into that. But, like, it's gorgeous in episode one. It's very Edgar Wright. It's very Scott Pilgrim versus the World of, like, bam, effects, like, smash cut two. And, like, when she's talking to someone, be like, here's how my driver's test is going to go. Cut two, full speed reverse. It's fun, it's peppy, it's edited well, it's very charming. Episode one, I think, just kicks ass.
Episode one was very good. I will say we might have a little bit of a bias because, like, episode one was the one where I felt the most connected to Kamala. Like, she didn't have powers yet. She was a nerd. She writes fan fiction. She wants to go to a Comic-Con. I'm like, been there. Been there on every single one of these check boxes. Wanted to go to my first con. I write fan fiction. I love superheroes. I'm Kamala Khan. This is absolutely great. A lot of that thing drops off. A lot of those things drop off after episode one. Mm-hmm. She's not as into superheroes. We'll talk about that later and everything. But I will say this is the first Marvel show, and maybe the first Disney Plus show probably, that felt like a traditional show in that on traditional television, the pilot gets a ton more work and money because they're trying to sell the show.
Right. Oh, I could very much see that in this show, yeah.
But in this show, it doesn't make any sense because like they announced the whole show. They didn't make a pilot and try to sell Marvel on it. But most shows get a much bigger budget for episode one. They make a pilot with a lot more work, a lot more money into it, a lot more time. And this felt exactly the same. This episode one was like, it pops, it's got energy, it's got a full Avenger Con we've created. There's a giant Ant-Man who looked so cool, like looked like a really fun con. Just everything works about episode one. You're like, oh, this is going to be like a fun show. Cool. And then, yeah, the energy and the production and the time spent on each episode really drops off after that.
It just never matches that promise. And yeah, literally every aspect of art love, like artistic television making. Yeah, editing, acting, performance, writing, visuals, post effects, prop making. Episode one has and nails it all. And I think the only question we had about episode one is, what con happens at night?
No, it doesn't. Why is Avenger Con for 3 hours on Friday night? Who rented out an entire convention center? And it's like, it's only for 3 hours on a Friday at from like 6 to 9 p.m.
And I'm like, did the writers of this have the writers of this episode ever been to a con?
I mean, I guess in the Marvel universe, superheroes have only existed for like 12 years. So this might be the first con ever. It is the first Avenger con.
The concept of a convention. Conventions cannot be new.
Conventions exist.
Conventions
We've
exist.
We've seen Tony Stark at conventions.
Absolutely.
And this is, you know what? We saw Tony Stark's helmet at this convention. And there's Tony Stark-esque things happening.
Conventions can have an after party or an evening element, but it's not only at night and mostly for kids. Like, when every school kid is there, I'm like, at a night con? No, that's a Saturday afternoon.
That's a 2 p.m. event.
What are we doing? I mean, like, all of these kids had to have that argument with their parents to be like, I want to go out of town for a three-hour evening convention. And that's why your convention is going to collapse. There is not going to be a second year of AvengerCon. It is one and done. This is a failing convention.
And there is an easier way to do this, which is maybe to, like, this is how things actually work, which is the time she wanted to go, which was late, might have been when the Captain Marvel contest was. Like, AvengerCon is all weekend, but I have to be there during the Captain Marvel costume contest because I'm entering that. And that's at 9 o'clock on a Friday. That could have worked, but that would just really be a lot of, like, going over the schedule of AvengerCon. Like, it's a three-day event, but I have to be there Friday at 9 p.m.
I think the event still works if it's, I want to go out of town to a con.
If, like, it's just far away.
It's still a conversation teens have to be like, I would like to go to a different city for a fun, nerdy thing that you don't understand during the weekend even. So, yeah, it being at night felt a very strange choice. And she had to, like they're going down, like, an alleyway, like a dark alleyway to get to AvengerCon.
On their bikes. And, yeah, it wasn't cool. And I will say, Kamala, like, I think you could have gone with your dad.
Her dad is awesome. When he shows up and he's green painted his face.
He's made a whole costume. Like, she doesn't have to dress. Like, you don't have to make, don't make her wear the matching costume, Mom. Like, that was not a cool thing to make it. Like, she doesn't want to dress like her dad. But, because also Bruno really likes your parents. I think all three of you would have had a great time at AvengerCon.
Yes.
It would have been, you know, harder to hide that you have superpowers and that you use them at AvengerCon. But, like, I think you would have had just as fun a time if your dad had driven you guys to AvengerCon. Just let him go.
And I get when you're a teen, even if you've got a cool dad who is willing to dress up like the Hulk to show love and appreciation of your interests, beautiful parental moment, a mother who is perhaps overbearing and making you a little bit childlike and refusing to allow you to wear more feminine clothing and things like that, who has some issues but has accepted a thing that you want to do with parental supervision. I get when you're a kid, you don't want any adult anywhere. However, as someone who grew up in a small town, there is something to be said. Not that Jersey's a small town, but in this scenario where you need to travel. Mm. In a small town, you got to get a car everywhere, right?
Yeah. You can't. There's no, you're not biking.
If you have to choose between having a parent at a thing and public transit, 99% of the time you're going to go the parent route. You know, like, I get that she didn't want her dad there, but the other option was a bus. And it's like, to a different, No, you go with dad there every time.
And also, I'm going to say 10 to 1, your dad's going to go in for like 20 minutes and then wait in the car.
Absolutely.
That's how dads roll. They're like, well, I'll be in the car listening to my songs and and enjoying a moment alone.
And a little bit less likely, a 5 to 1, because he seems like a cool dad, you get there and you can either convince him to not go in at all, which might hurt his feelings a bit because he does seem to sincerely love spending time with you.
He's really sweet.
Or a less likely, maybe like 3 to 1, you could convince him to be like, I'm going to go change into my Captain Marvel costume Mom didn't want me to wear. Don't tell Mom. Be cool. And he would be cool. I think that there's a good chance of that as well.
He would be cool. The costume wasn't even revealing.
No.
It was a normal outfit. Wasn't even that tight.
I get that there's some cultural differences, yeah, and issues going on there. But dad still seems like a cool dad who would keep one on the DL from mom. But we're also adults approaching this issue.
We are. This is why it's not aimed at us. But also, I felt like I was Kamala in the nerdiness and the fan fiction or whatever. And I went to nerd events with my aunt, not my mom, but my aunt is very nerdy. And she went to like Lord of the Rings events with me in high school. And we had a great time because she was also a nerd though. Her dad actually doesn't seem very nerdy. He seems supportive, but yeah, like he doesn't know anything about it. He didn't know who Carol Danvers was in episode 6.
He's just trying his best.
But I had fun with my aunt at Lord of the Rings events.
Well, that's very sweet.
Shout out to my Aunt Kelly if she's listening. We had a great time.
What up, Aunt Kelly?
Thanks for the elf ears.
Yeah, and all of those things happened during the day, I'm sure. Or most. Well, maybe not the movie marathon.
It started during the day.
Yeah.
It's 12 hours long, so yeah, it started in
you
the day.
You can't get, even during the solstice, you can't get that full, you can't get a full day.
Transitions into night.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Now, I will say one thing I'm a little bit disappointed by with how they approach Kamala's story in this, or like one kind of wasted opportunity, is I don't feel like she's really having a conversation with the broader MCU here, which I think is something that was such a huge opportunity for this, because I think a lot of the general public are getting Marvel fatigue. You know, when we talk to people who aren't hardcore nerds or just consuming all of the superhero stuff like we do, a lot of the times when I talk to like your average A person, they're like, I tapped out of Marvel like after Endgame. Endgame was kind of my out. I was waning then, and now I'm just kind of like, maybe I'll throw something on from time to time, but I don't care anymore.
It had the word end in it. So, really great stopping point.
A lot of people tapped out there, and there is such this like, there is this mania, and there's a lot to keep up with, and there's this and that. And I feel like Kamala could have been a character who was kind of in conversation with that, to be like, there is a fatigue, there's too many heroes, there's some people who just don't give a shit anymore. And I think that there have been stories with Kamala that tell that really well. The Avengers video game from Square Enix, which has its problems, I think does a really good job of being in conversation with its own mania, to be like, when you're obsessed with people, what do you do when you meet your heroes? And what happens when those heroes are actually not who you imagine them to be and are flawed people and kind of a mess and have their own infighting and bullshit that you can't keep up with, but you want them to be the people that you want them to be. And it just didn't go for that. And it feels like at this point in Marvel, this is the perfect time to have that conversation, to have a younger character come in and cut through the bullshit or shine a spotlight on it and kind of deal with that a little bit.
I actually also really thought that that's where this show was going to go, and was disappointed. I really would have liked and kind of expected a story arc of being transitioning from a fan to a peer. Not that she really was going to interact with Captain Marvel in this. Like, I did think it was going to be her show, but there is definitely a, like, I'm a fan of superheroes. How do I become them? And, like, I really expected some kind of, like, you know, like, some self-doubt, some imposter syndrome for a lot of it, where she'd just be like, oh, I'm not a superhero. Oh, no. And, like, gain her confidence. But as soon as she got powers, she kind of forgot other superheroes existed. Like, she didn't bring them up at all. Like, there was never a conversation that was like, should I register? And Registration Act, I assume, is still a huge thing that you have to do.
Huh.
She never once said, like, went online and was like, do you have to register if you have superpowers? Like, that's kind of a big deal, Civil War. There was never any conversation of, like, should I go apply to be an Avenger, or should I, like, audition? Like, it's like she didn't acknowledge there were other superheroes except Captain Marvel, who doesn't live on Earth. And even then, she didn't bring up Captain Marvel very much.
Not after episode one.
No,
episode
after she
one
won
is
that,
like, I
after
love
that costume contest, she was dead to her.
Yeah, episode one is like, this is my life. I love Captain Marvel. I love the Avengers. This is all of my interests. And then episode one ends, and it just never comes up again. And I get that at that point, you know, we've hit the inciting incident and she's on her own adventure, but that should still color how she perceives her own adventure.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Honestly, after episode one, this show could not even take place in the MCU.
Yeah.
It could just be a movie about a girl, a show about a girl with superpowers. She doesn't interact with anything that's happened. Like, she's dealing with an alternate dimension, not, or she's dealing with a different dimension, not an alternate dimension. Like, that's technically different than, yeah, like the Doctor Strange alternate dimensions. Like, she wasn't going to find herself across the veil, like a different version of herself.
Sure, yeah.
It's a dimension within our dimension.
Yeah, a pocket dimension maybe, or however you want to, yeah.
Whatever it is.
Sure.
Something complicated, yeah. So just nothing that relates to the MCU as we knew it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they really disconnected her after episode one.
Yeah, and I think that's a shame.
I think that's a shame. I would like the integration is what people get excited about. People love Easter eggs. People love when things are connected, like even just like pass by Avengers Tower.
Yeah.
Just show it. Like, just be like, that's like, I want to be there someday. Like,
that's it. It's got the busted A or whatever.
Or the fixed A, I guess, now.
Or
did the Statue of Liberty even have like the big shield on it? Like,
I don't think they showed the Statue of Liberty at any point.
I thought they saw it. No, well, then they should have. Like, the big cap shield on the Statue of Liberty. Like, it just didn't feel like it was part of the MCU.
Or like mentioning the blip or the death of Tony Stark or like anything like that. And even, kind of like the show seems to kind of forget some of these storylines. In the final episode, her best friend, Nakia, I believe.
I thought it was Nakia.
Nakia.
Which is like the same as the Black Panther character, which is great. But.
She's talking to Nakia and in the school, and it's like, are you mad at me? I didn't want to tell you because I love superheroes and you hate superheroes. And I'm like, where was this conflict the whole fucking show?
What?
I feel like this didn't come up once. And that is a very interesting thing. And I think a very interesting conflict for two best friends. And also a great conversation, a meta conversation about where Marvel is, where it has sycophantic, I love everything fans. And I'm so fucking sick of this. I hate all of these overhyped things. And that could be a meta conversation within itself and a great conflict for a friendship to have and a great reason not to tell your friend. And it's like, where was it though? Where was this thing that you just wrote as the defining relationship in the final episode?
Yeah, definitely. Because I took it that she didn't care for superheroes. Like, this isn't my fandom. I'm not going to go to AvengerCon. Like, and not that she hated them. She just wasn't into them.
Yeah.
But hating them and not being into them, two very different things. Because
mm-hmm.
one is an act of, like, I don't like the thing that you spend all your time doing, which is incredibly hard on a best friendship. That's almost impossible to overcome. Like, if my best friend was like, I hate superheroes, I'd be like, I run from superheroes.com.
Yeah.
Kind of a problem. And I think Kamala is basically at that level interest-wise. So, yeah, that was definitely absolutely tacked on in the final episode. Like, they had not put that in. They had not built that in any way. I mean, also, everything in the final episode was 80 yard and just changed. So what even was this story originally? Should we get into that right now? Or
let's just dive right into it because, you know, we've mentioned so far how much we love episode one and it's a promise that doesn't get fulfilled. And with each subsequent episode, like throughout the next five, it gets more and more off the rails, but it also becomes more and more visibly noticeable that there were reshoots, that there were complete sections edited, deleted, totally redone. So whatever this show originally was is not what we all saw on Disney Plus. It was something else. And then I think they changed maybe not episode two too much, but I'm going to say like 3, 4, 5, and 6 were all completely gutted and redone or felt like it.
The 3 was the wedding. I think that was normal.
But okay.
I would say 4, 5, 6 seemed completely redone. And it's wild that this has happened again because we already talked about this on Falcon and Winter Soldier, how they completely changed everything because they lost a filming location. I don't know what happened here that they changed everything.
Well, that was like that's the thing. Falcon and Winter Soldier, we were able to put together some of the pieces, and some of the pieces were public, where they were like, we started filming, COVID happened, we stopped filming, we started filming again. We wanted to film in Puerto Rico, earthquake happened, we didn't film in Puerto Rico.
We cut everything that was supposed to be filmed in Puerto Rico.
So like it's like, okay, natural disaster and biological disease got in your way. I don't know what happened in this one. And I was reading, there was an interview with the set designer of this show. And I actually think most of the sets look really goddamn good. The set designer did a phenomenal job.
Pakistan looks great. New Jersey looks great. Yeah, no problems with the sets. That, like, the Red Dagger's lair?
Yeah.
Cool.
Terrific.
Cool sets.
But this interview with the set designer was talking about, like, she accidentally implied the incredible amount of reshoots, where she says in this interview, she's like, I've never had less time to do so much. We thought we were finished filming, and then I got a phone call that says, you have a week, and you need to recreate a train station, a marketplace in Pakistan, and a cave, and you have a week to do it, and it's Atlanta in the winter. And all most of the Pakistan, the Karachi market scenes, I looked it up, were filmed in, not actually in Pakistan, they were filmed in Taiwan, but either way, they were filmed outside at an actual marketplace. They got a lot of the actual locations they needed to get. And then like a year later, a set designer gets a call, is like, you've got 1 week to remake that somewhere in Atlanta in the winter and make it look like Pakistan in the summer. And this set designer found like an abandoned mall with a giant skylight so the sun can still come in, but they have a controlled environment and this and that. And I think did a fantastic job, but you can see it's like the train station was reshoots. I think the lair was reshoots. The end of the marketplace, the explosion, the dimension shift, the cave, all last minute, 1 week notice reshoots.
Yeah, those three sections particularly are kind of like the only times in Pakistan that aren't crowded with people. Mm. Like the train station fight is just the two of them. It's just her and Red Dagger. And then the cave is Red Dagger's dad or mentor or whoever he was. Sorry, the IMDb is too far down.
Yeah.
And there. Yeah, and then the final fight scene is like, suddenly you're out of the marketplace and literally everyone's gone and it's just four people fighting. And you're like, and it's got concrete walls. And you're like, and when you know, because you told me this story, I was like, oh, when you know, you're like, yeah, this isn't inside a mall.
You can tell that it's a mall food court.
It's completely well hidden. If you don't know, you're like, oh, it's just like a building. But when you do know, you're like, no, this is a mall food court.
It's unbelievably well done. Like if someone asked me, they were like, could anyone make a abandoned Atlanta mall food court look like a Pakistan marketplace in a week? I'd be like, no set designer in their right mind could come anywhere near that shit. And this is very, very well done. Like, it looks great. It doesn't match the previous shot, but amazing.
Amazing. And you can also tell these are reshoots, I think, in like the lack of VFX. Like, in the marketplace, the final scene, and the ones that we think were filmed in the mall, when Kamala leaves, you can hear the sound of her making her little steps, and they don't actually show it. The mom just smiles like she's seeing her do it. So, like, sound effects where we couldn't afford, like, or didn't have the time to put the VFX in. We're like, we don't have time to VFX her light stepping away. We're just going to make the sounds, and you can imagine it. So it means they filmed it very late, and they changed it. And I just can't imagine what they changed it from. So the structure they've changed it to is that at the end of episode 5 of 6, the clandestines who are trying to open up the veil and can destroy all of two universes.
Yeah.
This is like Kamala's
a universe-ending event.
Kamala's got a universe-ending event that is resolved in episode 5 because the villain willingly kills herself.
And abruptly, without motivation.
Without cause, without a big fight, without a big... She's kind of just like... Because the first girl dies accidentally. She thinks she can cross over. She's like, oh,
and that's reasonable.
Absolutely reasonable.
And then two other of them disappeared because they clearly weren't available for reshoots, which is
unnecessary.
I get, but like, they weren't available for reshoots, which is such a messed up thing because the clandestines early on, it's four of them. It's four of them, and it's four of them in the fight. And then the dimension shift or the time shift happens and Kamala goes back to the past and cuts back to the future. And now it's an Atlanta mall. And instead of four clandestines, there's only two. And we just do not bring up where the other two are. But anyway, one die and then the main lady is just like, actually, never mind.
You know what? This storyline's over. Don't even worry about it, Kamala. I'll just close the gate for you and this will be complete. I'm like, well, why did we do any of this? What's episode 6 gonna be? So episode 6 is just some government goons instead of let's save the world?
Yes.
That's not how story structure works. I'm sorry. Why? Like, the only thing I can think that they changed, and this is just wild speculation, is that in some version they had originally, Kamala, like, killed the bad guy, and they were like, we actually don't want her to kill people.
Maybe.
Like, why else would she just walk into her death?
But too much has been changed for it to be as simple as that. Because it's like, we don't want the hero to have killed someone. It's like, okay, well now...
It's just one scene.
It's one scene. We can just redo visual effects. The portal grabbed one of them and that's the end. There's way too much change. But like, part of me thinks that it is reshoots, and part of me thinks it's just bad writing from the jump, because all of these episodes, this group, the clandestines, or whatever you want to call them, because they can't make up their fucking minds. Because like, we meet them in, I think episode 2 is when she meets like the second cute boy and has the driving lesson, and then she's rich in cute boys.
Yeah, she has a wealth of cute boys.
And we can talk about the cute boys in a moment, but
we will
talk about the cute boys
in a moment. I demand.
You know what?
A time slot for the cute boys. Finish your thought.
I agree. I'll pencil in the cute boys right now. But we meet these villains, and even then, like, the lady's like, hello, we're the clandestines. Actually, we're kind of the djinn. We're the djinn. And then, like, Bruno is looking up information on djinn to be like, here's how you send the demons back to their own dimension. And then the next episode is like, actually, they're not djinn. Fuck that whole thing. They're not that. At one point, she goes, we're the exiles. And I'm like, that's actually a different Marvel comic that none of you are. And then... the next scene after that, she's like, actually, call us the clandestines. I'm like, you can't change the name of your fucking group this much. This is so annoying. And then this whole, like, we've been searching for you. You have the bangle. We found you. My son honeypotted you in. It's a slow plan. I've been waiting 100 years. And then Kamala's like, I don't know, and sends that text to the boy. And the boy's like, well, enjoy the wedding. We'll talk tomorrow. And then the mother's like, I can't believe you betrayed us. Now I have to go murder everyone at this wedding. It's like, do you?
It is.
Because I feel like you were just going to wait till tomorrow anyway.
It is the most overreactive response absolutely possible of, I've been waiting thousands of years. I asked this girl for help because I think she might be able to do it. She gave me a soft maybe. And I decided to kill her in the most public fashion possible at a wedding, instead of, because I know where she lives, waiting until the next day at her house.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
A wedding with hundreds of guests?
Or waiting till the next day to see if that soft maybe turned to a yes.
I feel like you could have got her on board.
Yeah.
Bruno only barely pushed her to a no.
Yeah.
One more quick conversation and a couple puppy eyes from Kamran, and she would have been like, I'll give it a try.
You've waited 100 years.
I think more than that? Yeah, it was a long time.
You've waited a long time, and now you're just like, actually, nah, kill them. Kill them all.
Time for... And it was kind of uncomfortable, because, like, I just feel like they don't have to, but like, I feel like teens should kind of fight teens sometimes. Because when these four adults with like axes are trying to murder this 16-year-old girl,
yeah.
I was like, I'm uncomfortable with this. Like, this isn't fun for me. Mm. This isn't like a superhero who I'm not worried about. I'm like, she doesn't know how to use her powers. She is not invulnerable. One hit with that axe and she's done.
You, like, would just decapitate a teenager.
Like, Bruno gets a little bit of backswing on one of those things and his arm collapses. Like, he can't use it the rest of the show. Like, it's just not very fun. Like, if Kamran was evil and she was fighting someone her own age, it would be a little bit more like, oh, okay, this is... Maybe not flirtatious, but it's like on par.
And they play with that a little in the final episode, but like, yeah, in this one, they don't play with it at all.
Four, like, warriors who are thousands of years old be like, time to kill a 16-year-old. I'm like, ugh, that's dark.
Interesting.
I really would like if you were trying to kidnap her and force her to help you, please. You're just going straight for murder.
And even if Kamala, let's say Kamala, in an imaginary scenario, she's 30. And she has trained.
Okay.
She's still
Black Widow.
It's still not fun because these fight scenes are miserable.
Mm.
This is another sign of like reshoots, no time. The fight choreography is frankly embarrassing. There's one shot where like one of the big dudes who's part of one of the clandestines, exiles, Eternals, djinn, who goes to take a punch at, I think, a cop. And just like there's no one else in frame, and just punches off camera, and you hear a soft thud, and he just goes, "Yeah." I'm like, "Who did you punch, though, dude? Who did you punch just now?"
There was a 16-year-old that they like photoshopped out because they were like, "People don't like when we kick 16-year-olds' butts."
So there's just shit like that where I'm like, you can't just punch no one off screen for nothing, and then go, "Yeah, it's." it's really bad looking fighting. Really bad.
It is. It's like, yeah, they didn't put much time into it for like, for four people who are carrying themselves like really good fighters, because I think the other three are probably just stunt fighters because they don't have any lines.
That was my assumption, yeah.
Like for three people who are carrying themselves and moving like people who have like fight experience and know what they're doing, you feel like you're watching it and you're like, oh, this is going to be a really good fight. Look how these guys carry themselves. Like they're ready for a big action scene. And then it's kind of just like Kamala runs over a table and like they miss her. And it's, but it's like, there's no like, and maybe there can't be because Kamala doesn't have any fight training. So like, why would her fights be all that good?
Yeah.
I think the one with, I actually think the reshoot one with her and Red Dagger guy were probably her best fight. It was the cleanest one. It was fun. It was
that
like
wasn't
they
bad.
Had banter. It seemed like it had the most thought put into it. Like, you know, they had to make that set quick, but maybe they like planned out the fight very well.
Yeah.
But yeah, all the fights with the clandestine djinn, the clan djinn.
The clan djinn exiles.
The clan djinn exiles.
Yeah.
Yeah, really just boring, kind of messy, no fun.
And especially when, like, the other three I'm going to definitely presume was a stunt person because the main bad, this lady, it's like, I get not everyone's a stunt person, but I'm like, you were visibly struggling to do a deep squat sometimes. I'm like, I don't need you doing backflips. But we shouldn't be doing, like, a Texas switch cutaway to a camera B because you had to, like, bend over to pick up some keys. The one that killed me was after they get arrested. So the wedding gets broken up. And by the way, I had a lot of fun at the wedding.
The like, wedding was amazing.
They have that is amazing. It's beautiful. Where the show does really shine is in its sense of community and family and even, you know, the conflict that arrives within family and community. It doesn't need to be this beautiful, perfect place, but the conflicts and then support that arises out of it is wonderful. And I love the wedding section.
Everything, like pretty much everything. I was mostly mad at the villains for showing up because I was having so much fun at this wedding. I'm like, don't you dare interrupt this wedding. There are dances. Another thing that like felt like it's actually had like a lot of time and love put into it, especially when like Kamala's learned the dance, like the main actress learned a dance for this sequence. Like, so yeah, there was so much love in the wedding, like all the speeches, every conversation, just like when this, like when the brother is just worried, he's like, doesn't have enough money to raise a family. And they're like, we're all a family. We help each other. There's just so many good conversations that episode. Yeah. All of her family stuff is complicated in a real and nice way.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not just like straightforward, like kind of maybe like what I would say like a Peter Parker deals with of like, we just love each other all the time and there's kind of never a conflict about it. This
is more
of a real family of like, you know, we love each other all the time, but we fight and we get mad at each other and like things don't go right all the time, but we love each other.
Yeah. Yeah. And like just, yeah. And the brother feeling very brotherly to be like, I'm going to make fun of you sometimes, but I got your back. Like we're down. Like just like shit like that. It felt really nice.
The mom really like developed nicely as she went too when she finally got like a personality, when she like reconciled with her mother, which is Kamala's grandmother, was beautiful. Really fun, cute lines that she got later. Like, so it's spyware for parents?
Why wasn't I told?
That line read was incredible, lady.
Hilarious. Yeah, she really nails this character and like plays a really good job of like of too stern into wildly accepting. And I think like that rekindling of the relationship with her mother really collapsed a lot of storylines on top of one another in a beautiful way where it's like, I guess if you grew up thinking that your mother was detached from reality and a little insane, maybe on top of any kind of cultural expectations, you would be worried about your daughter falling into fantasy and escapism from reality. So, like, I think that would then even be additionally concerning. But finding out that your mother's impression of the world was valid and not a misjudgment or something that, like, that she is misreading the world, to add validity to your mother and then kind of having that undermine your relationship with your daughter, to be like, I do need to give my daughter more breathing room. There's more to this world than I as a mother understand. A really beautiful transition of that character. I love it. The family is the heart and soul of the show.
The family makes everything work in this show. Yeah, I feel like they might have given the mom a better arc than they gave Kamala, because Kamala, like, wants to be a superhero at the beginning and wants to be a superhero at the end. I think her arc is just telling her family about it and bringing them into the fold and like sharing it with them. Mm. But the mom goes on a way bigger journey of like letting go, of forgiving, of reconnecting with her mom. Really great stuff. Yeah, that's the everything with family is so much better than everything with superpowers in this show. This is a great family drama.
And I also really like at all of the cultural events, at the wedding, at Eid Mubarak, having Bruno there as well to be like being very supportive but also curious. And I'm like, I feel seen a little in this scenario. Just Bruno being like, what's that? Was it like just like that's cute and sweet, but in a supportive, like you've done as much research and preparation as you can.
Yeah.
And I like that.
Like, I believe that they're best friends in a very nice way, which I think is normally like, I think normally like a character like Kamala, it has to just do like normal, like American things or like whatever just regular teens do. But like this being her POV was so great because Bruno felt like her best friend and felt involved in her life in like a realistic way. Like he didn't really know, like he kind of knew what most of the holiday was. It felt like he'd been there before.
Yeah.
And he like even had a proper appropriate wear to like wear there. He's like, is this too bright? And they're like, you're right. Like, look at this boy try.
Well, they were like, it is a bit too much at
look
the same
time. Look
at
this boy try. I'm so proud of you. Yeah. He was very cute. Are we on cute boys?
We not about cute boys.
Okay. There's too many.
Agreed.
I can't believe, but also, wow, the power of Iman, that she has incredible chemistry with all three of these cute boys. Holy crap. I don't know who I'm rooting for. I sincerely, like, I'm like, none? All? I just don't know who I want you to be with. You're crushing all of these cute boys.
Yeah. Yeah, crushing it in a very, like, in a very relatable and understandable way. Like Iman Vellani, as Kamala, there are moments where like just the simple direction of like, and now you are looking at a cute boy and you are a teenage girl who is responding to a cute boy like you've never seen a cute boy before. And you're conveying all of that with your eyes. And just like her facial expression, I'm like, oh my God, that is a teen who just now fell in love. And then even though the show has too many cute boys, to like one day later meet a new cute boy and fall in love and give him eyes like you've never seen a cute boy before. I'm like, that feels very teenage, and you've also sold the shit out of that as a performer.
I love remember getting a new crush every day, especially in new like circumstances. Cause like when you're at your high school every day, a new boy is very crushable. Like you basically Bella from Twilight just walked in the door. Like that's what Cameron is. So like, you know, a cute new boy. Oh my goodness. New stuff. You go to a new country and like, oh, cute new boy. Yeah, like you would when you're a teen, of course you're gonna fall in love or at least fall in crush every like cute boy you see. The complaint I will have is she doesn't end up with a cute boy. She doesn't get a smooch.
No, nothing.
And like, you don't have to, but you can't set up three cute boys and then be like, none of them?
And she almost has one smooch, but with a villain / hero who is wildly weirdly written because that whole last episode is reshoots and most of his dialogue is spoken from the back of his head and we never see his mouth move because clearly all of the plot has changed.
Yeah, a character who was like completely side of good until they decided to make him the finale and they're like, now he has to be willing to kill cops. And I'm like, okay.
Is he?
Would he do that? Is like, could his light just not be as sharp? His light was really sharp.
His light was just a little too sharp.
It was too sharp. It was too deadly, whereas Kamala had, like, blunted light.
And also, it's all poorly motivated because of the reshoots. So there's, like, the moment he finds out his mom is dead, the camera's on the back of his head. So we just see the back of his head, and it's just, like, a voice off camera going, my mom's dead, isn't she? And then, like, a close-up of Kamala from, I think, a different scene, nodding and going, yes. And then random shit starts happening.
There's one scene where they're running in the hallway with very important dialogue, and the camera is super far away, and all the lines are ADR. And I'm like, I can't see. Like, I can't believe you guys had a shot of these two from so far away just in case you needed ADR lines, I guess. Because I can't see their mouths to see if this matches up.
The whole last episode is very much like, who's chasing us? It's Mr. Black. Oh no, we better get away from Mr. Black.
They absolutely do have to do that, because tell me the name of the person chasing them, Andrew. Who's the big bad in the finale? The blonde lady? Mr. Black.
Mr. Black.
Yeah, she is nobody. I think she has a name, but who knows what it is.
It is over-the-top child's villain who says S's snithering like a snake to let you know that she is the villain of the show.
On her off hours, she kills 100 puppies to make a coat.
Uh-huh.
She is just cookie cutter, teen villain.
Yeah, very Disney villain. Yeah. Cruella de Vil, I think, is a very good explanation of her. And that brings me to another thing I want to mention about the show that I find very frustrating, is that within the Marvel Universe, there is a lot of criticism, and I think reasonably so, and I think it's a complex issue around a lot of the movie stuff and things getting funded, sponsored, or shooting with permission of the U.S. military.
Mm-hmm.
Captain Marvel was a big example of that. There were a lot of people, and I think rightfully so, highly critical of Captain Marvel and its cooperation / endorsement / potentially recruiting propaganda for the U.S. Air Force and armed forces.
Yeah, a lot of Captain Marvel is, it's great being an Air Force pilot. Wouldn't you like to be an Air Force pilot?
Absolutely it is. And I think that this is a complicated issue. I am typically very, very left-leaning, very, anti-propaganda in any way. I think in film, cooperation with the military is a very complicated thing because sometimes it's the only way to get access to certain things. And I think that there are stories and points of view to be told there. But if you're going to do that, you also have to be willing to tell the opposite. And what I find really frustrating about Marvel is that when the story they want to tell is positive, it is sponsored by legitimate government divisions. So it's like Carol Danvers is who she is because of the U.S. Air Force. Fly U.S. Air Force. Check out a recruiter today. Thank you, U.S. military services. And that's something that people out there believe and feel, and that's a reasonable story to tell. But then when you're critical, you have to be critical of the same forces. And this show, and most of Marvel, when it's like, did you know that the cops are racist? Not like cops. It's our silly police. We made them up. They're not real police.
They're just called damage control.
They're the department. It's not a real government agency. Real government agencies aren't corrupt or racist at all. Don't worry about it. So it's like, if you're going to go pro U.S. Air Force, you have to also be willing to go anti-cop. You can have both. If both are real, then that's fine. Both can also be made up. SHIELD and HYDRA, made up. Nothing feels inappropriate about that fight to me. But you can't have pro-U.S. pro-U.S. military and anti-Department of Defense. And in fact, the cops stand up for the corrupt cop, stand up against the corrupt cops in the final episode. I'm like, we have pro cop. So the show that's like, these cops are a little corrupt and racist, and in fact are trying to get anyone in over-policed communities that are highly people of color to turn against one another, and are trying to get children in an interrogation without an attorney or an adult present to imply crimes of other children at their school, and are trying to asking leading questions just to get children to say brown person so that they can start rounding up brown people. And it's like, the cops are the heroes, though. That's the Department of Defense. The Department of Defense, though, are the ones who do that. They're the made-up silly police.
Yeah, it was very, very weird and noticeable, and like, someone paid you to do that when like the uniformed cops all stood with the community, which would be lovely if they would in real life, but absolutely not would they do that. I don't think the Marvel Universe is that disconnected from the one we live in.
Yeah.
That's how that scene would have gone down.
Yes. Yeah.
Maybe just have the community pulling a nice Spider-Man 2 moment. Because, that's a nice moment. That's a, like,
we're united as a community.
Be careful, he's a hero. We're united to take care of Spider-Man, Spider-Man 2-esque. And this is very much a, we are uniting to protect Nightlight or whatever we're going to call her. We don't know her name's Kamala. Well, most of us do, probably. Mm. Her costume is just a little mask.
Yeah, but in this scenario, it's like the entire Muslim community has come to protect Kamala. And then also the white cops who don't live in this area of town. No. You don't get to do that. It's a really shitty fucking thing to do.
No one even told you to put them there.
Just don't have cops.
Just don't have cops. just have damage control if this is the way you want to tell this story.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But then I still stand by that there are problems of being pro-real real government forces and then anti-silly made-up government forces. You've got to have a consistency across the board. And I think that is a problem that this show has towards the end. And I think like the last thing that I want to bring up that feels like a real I'm like, I think you were trying to do this, but you never actually like said anything about it or did it, which was with the big bad and like the villain team that were from the other dimension who were trapped here. And when we get to the like the Red Dagger lair and like the mentor like brings up a map and he's like, here's what's going on. They're from this dimension. There's an imaginary line between that dimension and this dimension. And if we remove that line, then both dimensions fold into one. And I'm like, oh, okay. So we're actually trying to tell a story about interdimensional India's partition.
Oh shit.
And I think that was the story that they wanted to tell. And then they abandoned that really hard where I'm like, okay, so the story is, you know, Kamala's family during the partition of India and Pakistan are forcibly separated and have to leave the home that they don't want to leave, which is what the clandestines exiles, Jin exiles, clandestines specials or whatever had to do. And there is a dimensional partition between two different worlds that are keeping separate worlds apart, and you can't go back to your original home. And I'm like, okay, what do we have to say about that? And they had nothing to say about that. And it's right there. Like, as soon as they showed the map, I'm like, oh, dimensional partition. That's the metaphor you're going for, is two different perspectives on this historical event.
Babe, I pride myself on my readership of stories, and I didn't catch that, but obviously that's where the parallels were supposed to be or should have been at the very least. Because, yeah, the grandmother even has this lovely speech about, I'm pretty sure she says, I was born in India, but my passport's Pakistani. Like,
yeah.
I was born in one place and I'm stuck here. And not that I'm stuck here, it's my home now, but like, how do I go back or why can't I go back? Like, there is a partition in this world.
Yeah.
And there's a partition for they're not celestials. What are you called?
The clandestines.
I can't remember this word, even though it's a real world word. No. The clandestines, yeah, like they want to go back. They're stuck on this side. They're from two different worlds. You would think even the great grandmother, Aisha, when she is like, back in time, like that was her time at the time, would be like, oh, I know about partition. Like she's living a second partition at that point.
Yeah, yeah.
She's double partition. There should be huge parallels that are much more noticeable to a viewer for these two stories.
And I think even of the great grandmother, the clandestine who fell in love and created a new home after being, you know, I guess I don't really know what sent them out of their dimension or whatever. There's no interdimensional British in that storyline, so it's not a one-to-one. But whatever it was that forced them to remove, there is something with the grandmother who it's like is rightfully angry about having forcibly left her home, but finds a new home and looks to hope in the future, whereas the rest of them hold on to anger and resentment and, you know, a level of like, do I turn to destruction and tear down the walls, or do I build something anew? And those are two interesting perspectives, but they don't have anything to say about it. And they have that map scene and then they're like, and don't worry about this. This is too weird. We don't know what to do with the metaphor here.
They really didn't know what to do with it. I think they didn't have an answer to it, which is like, you know, also who has an answer to the actual partition of like what the right answer of what to do is? Probably not hold on to your anger for hundreds of years.
Right. And who has the right answer? Not the British. We'll agree with that.
We will agree.
Or the interdimensional British, whoever they were in this clandestine scenario.
Maybe these people are the interdimensional British.
You know what? Fuck
we don't know. Sure. The British left. They left.
Who drew the random border between the dimensions? That's what I want to know. What random lord?
Who made the veil border? Tell us. That's right.
Yeah. What lord who had never been to another dimension decided to draw that border?
That would be an incredibly powerful story, especially like, and it would explain why they would send Kamala back in time to get like a look at like a feel of partition and to tell more of this story to convince the people in the current day of like how they should be living their lives. Cause Aisha made a wonderful life for herself. She was happy and she was settled and she was, she didn't want to do partition, but she was happy on this side of the first partition she was part of. A lot of partitions.
A lot of layers going on. But I also really liked that that romance story as well with her in the past. Like, I thought that was beautifully told until it reached, you know, the cartoonish villainy once that arrived. But I'm like, I like this little, like, love story of you two kind of getting to know one another and starting a family. And
I liked the love story enough. It wasn't, like, the cutest short love story I've ever seen. It was no, like, that one episode of, like, Mythic Quest or, like, one, like, shortly told beautiful love story. Actually, for me, I mean, the train...
I thought those actors sold it, though.
The actors sold it. I actually think the highlight of that episode for me would be the train station was so hectic. They got so many actors. It felt so crowded. Like, you could feel the tension and, like, the desperation in those scenes. Like, that was incredibly well, like, set up, film directed. Like, that entire train sequence was really, really good. And then I'm going to say, when Kamala just appears and her grandmother is dying, that got me in the gut, actually. Oh. Iman sold the fuck out of that. I really felt like I was watching, like, an actual 16-year-old girl watch her just, like, grandmother dying next to her. Like, it was sudden in a way that doesn't work the rest of the show. The rest of the show does a lot of things very suddenly. Scenes just kind of stop and start, and this is one of them. But that was a very sudden thing that actually, like, really got me. Of, like, whoa, this... She just fell into this situation and her grandmother's dying.
Huh. I do agree with that. That is a great way to describe it. Sudden describes a lot of this show.
And it's not a compliment most of the time.
But it is a compliment there. I think the final thing that I want to talk about that we didn't talk about was the X-Men mutant connection.
Oh, shit.
Of it all. So I guess we've introduced mutants are a thing now.
I guess she is a mutant and a half clandestine. That's a lot of things.
So she's got two things.
She's got two things. People can have two things.
Hey, if Star-Lord's dad can be a planet in the second movie, we could just make her a mutant at the end of this one.
You
Why
get
not?
To be two things. Yeah, I mean, we had glimpses. We saw Professor X in Multiverse, but that wasn't our verse.
Yeah.
So this is going to be our first touch of mutants, which is, yeah, so I guess she's an inhuman in the comics.
Yes.
So now she's a mutant, but she also has a bracelet, which obviously she does not have in the comics. She's just an inhuman who has basically Reed Richards' powers. There was a lot of controversy online about them changing this, but
I don't mind. I really do not mind the energy powers. I think it's more visually interesting. It looks better, and from everything I understand, it's 1/5 the budget of trying to do a stretchy person, and they barely had the budget for doing these visual effects, so they could not have handled a stretchy person.
Everything I know about stretchy person, and also it just makes sense because, like, Reed's going to be showing up soon, like, Fantastic Four is greenlit, because everything I know about stretchy powers, as a person who listened to both audio commentaries of the first two Fantastic Four movies, skin is very, very hard to not even make look good, just at all. It's very hard to make it stretchy. There's a reason, actually, like, they made the suit stretchy in the movies was because the blue was way easier to work with than trying to do the texture of skin. So you almost never saw his actual skin, like, do as much stretchy as possible. So stretchy is really hard. A glowy effect, way less hard. Yeah. I'm totally cool with it. And it looks cool, and it's different. And it's kind of the same thing. I didn't make my hand big. I made some light around my hand big. Same thing.
Cool with it. Cool. Same vibes. I'm all about it.
Yeah, you're doing the same things you were doing. The only thing I will complain about is that it basically gives her the power of flight, which she doesn't have. Having the power of flight is hugely different than not having the power of flight.
But with stretchy arms, she has gotten in the comics like a hair away from like a Spider-Man web swinging for getting quickly around the city.
That's still not flight, though. Like, if you can just make a thing alight and then make that shoot into the air, that's flight.
I'm going to say that if you do not have the ability to survive upper atmosphere or space, it's not the heart of flight. It's not the heart of comic book flight. You got to be able to handle the you got to solve the freezing problem, the de-icing problem.
A lot of people can fly without space. I mean, Johnny Storm, he can't go into space.
Can't he?
No, his fire would go out.
I mean, suns happen in space. You know what I mean? Like he's going Nova, I think, like was the implication.
I mean, there is some, you know what? There is a thing. He gets like a special pack that creates air because he needs to breathe.
Right, right. Okay.
Even if the flames don't go out, he needs to breathe. But if he has an air pack, he can do it. All right. You think space is the thing?
I think not even true, like I'm flying around space. But you got to be able to, like, handle once the air gets thin. At least thin air.
Okay, okay.
Is flight. She is still just walking high, is what I would say.
I mean, I'm just saying it's easy to escape situations where someone's, like, chasing you.
Right.
It's easy. Like, she could, like, every time she was trying to get away from these damage control cops, I was like, go up.
But the damage control cops also couldn't see left to right either, it would seem, was another thing with the show. She would just move slightly to the left, and they were like, where'd she go? I don't know.
We won't arrest her.
No, whatever.
She went through a door real quick.
A little to the left. I think the thing that surprised me about the reveal that she is a mutant is that it's like, wow, this is the first mutant. And I didn't think Ms. Marvel was going to be the show to do that. The show that was based on a comic where her powers are inhuman, that we've already introduced, that she's half interdimensional celestial. It feels like kind of a waste.
It feels like you said, like if Star-Lord was the first mutant.
Yeah.
We're like, but you're already the first other thing.
I guess you could be, but why? And maybe it's just like, and they kind of use a writing excuse to be like, well, that's why no one else in your family has it. It's like, it could just be a gift that passes a generation or like your emotions. It could be anything.
I mean, they also only have one bangle. Like, that's hers. No, yeah. Brother. You don't get to use it. It's my bangle.
Yeah. And also, too, like, it feels like this whole phase of Marvel has been the magic phase.
Yeah.
Which, like, the bangle, even though it's, like, interdimensional, like, all, air quote, magic has some kind of a science background as we're, like, finding through Marvel. But it feels like it fit in very well with the, like, this is the magical phase of Marvel. And, you know, I assumed Mutant would be the next one. So that was caught me off guard.
Oh, more than magic, I've actually thought this phase was the dimension phase. Like, No Way Home is about dimensions.
Ooh, okay.
Doctor Strange 2 was about dimensions. This was about a partition and a dimension. So I've been thinking of this as the dimension phase, not the...
That's interesting.
Not the magic phase.
Oh, yeah. I've been thinking of it as the magic phase.
We have different ideas of the phase. Either way, not the mutant phase.
Not the mutant phase. Neither of us have been thinking of the mutant phase. But I like that they're still using that 90s theme. It slaps, and you got to use it.
It gets you right in your gut, and you get excited immediately. It
feels good.
Don't listen to it before bed, you guys.
No, it gets you too jazzed up. Too jazzed up. Well, let's go in for the close. Let's ask the final question of what would you change? So now that we've discussed everything we've discussed, what would you change? Before we do, we will take a second to remind you, as we do every week, if you've already done this, you can skip ahead. If not, please don't. Please subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podcast Addict, wherever you get your podcasts. Take a moment. Be sure you're subscribed.
Be certain.
You gotta be certain. And then leave a rating and review.
It'll warm our hearts. We'll read it. We'll be like, oh, 5 stars. I feel so good about myself. I'm going to be a better podcaster now.
Yeah.
I'm going to level up.
And that, and on top of leveling up in our personal and podcasting life, it helps us find new listeners. And then new listeners, when they do find the show, they do check those reviews. It encourages new people to actually like get invested and get in and check it out. So it means a lot. And that's a free way to support the podcast. If you do want to support the podcast monetarily and get cool bonuses for it, you can check us out over on Patreon, which is a monthly subscription service where you can subscribe at whatever level you choose, and you can get different kinds of cool bonuses for doing so. For example, at the $10 hero level, you get a bonus episode of this podcast every single month.
A bonus episode every month. There's like 80 other episodes waiting for you when you sign up. You get access to all of them. They're ad-free episodes on a thing we never cover on the regular podcast. This month we did Stranger Things season 4 part 2. If you want the totality of Stranger Things season 4.
If you want to know what we think about the second music cue or the 100th time they play Running Up That Hill,
you're going to have to go to patreon.com/fromsuperheroes.
And check it out if it's in the budget. And like I said, you can subscribe at any level that is in your budget. If you just want to support us out for a buck, those add up and sincerely make a huge difference here at the network. And you can also cancel and change at any given time, or you can switch to a yearly, which means that you get 1 month free each year. Whatever it is, there's lots of options. Go over, check it out, patreon.com/fromsuperheroes. That's P-A-T. reon.com/from superheroes. And now let's go in for the close. Let's ask the final question of what would you change? Diana, what would you change?
I have one quick change that isn't that big a one, but it's something I really wanted to see. When Kamala goes back in time to the train station,
Gotta go back in time. I don't know why I had to do that.
I had to interrupt my change.
I did.
Sing back in time.
I did. You know what?
Do you regret it?
I apologize for it.
That's not a regret.
It's not.
All right. I will accept your apology.
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't regret it. I loved doing it. I'm still sorry it happened.
Complicated emotions.
I'm an enigma.
If I say back in time again, you're not going to do it again.
I'm just going to mute my microphone.
Okay. Excellent. He's muted. My quick change, Kamala, when she goes back in time to save her grandmother, you wanted to say it. To save her grandmother. Instead of her grandmother just being already stabbed and like it kind of being over, they're going to fight next to each other for a little while. I really wanted like a little bit more interaction here. I think it actually really helps with the storytelling too, because then if the main bad guy sees her in the past, she knows when she meets her in the future that she can make dimensions because she's already seen her time travel. So it kind of just connects better. And also I need this stars thing to not be so shoehorned in. Like if it's in the middle of the fight, I think Kamala can just like throw the granddaughter like to the dad, basically like a star threw me straight to my dad or whatever. It can't just be like we were playing hopscotch with my powers for no particular reason. That was lame as hell. It was like such a nice idea that was executed so poorly. I was very surprised. My biggest change is actually we don't go to Pakistan. I think this kind of ruined the momentum. It kind of, the story had no kind of structure. Like, and I was also just like so hung up on like, it takes so long to get there. Your mother would never bring you there. You just ruined a wedding. Like this would not happen.
Your mother wouldn't let you go to slightly outside of Jersey.
Yeah.
Like, I guess I know family vacations are different.
It's not matching up with the timelines of what's happening with Bruno and Kamran back home. Like it just doesn't work. So instead of her going to Pakistan, the grandmother just came to the wedding. Like we're still going to have all of this like,
oh, of course.
Of course.
Of course.
The grandmother just came to the wedding. We're still going to reconcile. We're still going to figure out your powers. You can still get stabbed in the bangle and go back to old Pakistan, and we still get the flashbacks, and you still, like, see the train station and everything. But we don't have to meet a third cute boy. You don't really learn anything in Pakistan. It's kind of a lovely story with her grandmother, but it would be just as lovely in Jersey if she just came to the wedding. I didn't see the reason why we had to do this whole, like, there's no side characters in this one. There's no Nakia. There's no Bruno. There's no Kamran. Like, it's just Kamala on her own meeting another cute boy. It seemed really unnecessary. So, yeah, she just stays in Jersey, and the grandmother comes to New Jersey. And, like, more stuff happens plot-wise, and, like, the end is obviously the dimensional portal and not just Kamran being like, I want to leave. So those are my main changes. Yeah, and I don't know, more scenes with Kamala? She's so good. I know it's her show, and I'm just like, you're so good. Andrew, what would you change?
I love that. I'm on board with all of it. That is, and yeah, grandmother at the wedding makes everything so much more efficient.
She could have seen Kamala use her powers, like, and be like, oh, you did use your powers.
I love it. I love it so much. And I'd say it incorporates well into my change. Oh. My change, this is a movie.
Oh, it could just be a movie. They don't have enough for six episodes.
They do not have enough for six episodes. They're bouncing around with cute boys. And what works in this is the family and some of the basic friendships and relationships. And at its core, everything that works in this, and I mean this as a compliment, is just Spider-Man Homecoming, where it is literally, it is exactly Spider-Man Homecoming. It is a teen with powers that they don't quite understand has a crush on someone whose parent turns out to be their villain, while the Department of Damage Control is the one inciting a series of incidents at a high school. It is almost exactly the playbook of Spider-Man Homecoming, and that works as a very quick and efficient movie. And I think that that's it. I think it's just, it's all of the good parts of the show. And, you know, unfortunately, that does mean I'm with your change. We cut the Pakistan. The grandmother comes to the wedding. It is Kamala is gifted a bangle, now has this powers, has a friend named Bruno, and a boy she has a crush on. And that evolves into the boy she has a crush on, the mom is the big bad who wants the bangle back, and instead of this final fight scene at the high school, we move it to the wedding, where, like, at that high school scene in the final episode, it's like, your brother's here, why? And they make kind of a joke to be like, they're here, who gives a shit? But everyone was organically at the wedding.
Everyone was at the wedding. We would lose the white girl.
Yeah, we would lose
whoever was.
TikTok friend or whatever.
Joy or something?
Whatever.
Who was there for no particular reason. But yeah, so everyone's at the wedding.
So I think it is this story, but it is a movie. It skips the Pakistan section, and the climax of the movie happens at the wedding. At that wedding, her great aunt is the one who shows up to crash the wedding to get the bangle back to open a dimensional portal, while her grandmother tells her where it is that she's come from and what's actually going on.
That works so nicely. It's like a proven structure. Like, even if it is Spider-Man Homecoming, that structure works. And this is a different enough story that it's not the same. But like, it's not a show. It is, they didn't give themselves enough content for a show. This would be a great movie. It'd be a banging movie.
I think and especially for like a charismatic, wonderful like lead actor here. Like, I think that pops more in a movie. Like, if this was a movie, people would be leaving the movie being like, Iman Vellani is a star and is Kamala and is Miss Marvel, and this is the next fucking phase of the MCU. We love Iman and we love Miss Marvel. I think it would be a similar reaction to people with Tom Holland and Spider-Man, like leaving Homecoming and being like, man, this kid is Spider-Man. Holy shit. We love this dude. Miss Marvel could be exactly that if it was a movie. This is a movie. That's my big change.
I like it. And I can't wait to see her in the next movie.
Yes, she deserves a movie. I think she'll pop more in a movie. I'm so glad
she's already like confirmed to be in a movie, because I'm like, I would be so sad if she just like disappeared into the ether.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I love this change. I think it makes total sense, and I'd watch that movie, and I'd be like, because like if all of the like the care of episode one was in an entire movie of like the texting on screen and the thoughtfulness of like the Edgar Wright cuts, and like that would be a banging movie. Would slap.
Yeah, we've done it.
Edgar Wright style Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yeah. You know what? We've done it. I think we've done it.
I think we've done a great thing.
Yeah. I think we've both really, really added to this considerably. We've made it better. And that's going to be it for this week for our conversation on Ms. Marvel. We are going to be back next week on the podcast, and we are going to be talking about Resident Evil. Don't mistake it for any of the numerous other things just titled Resident Evil. It is Resident Evil, the new television series on Netflix. So the Netflix series Resident Evil is what we're going to be talking about next week. Until then, if you want to get a hold of us, you can reach me online at Ivamey, I-V-I-M-E-Y.
You can reach me at Words of Diana.
And you can reach both of us at From Superheroes. And we'll talk to y'all next week.
Bye.